Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, along with Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to continue our conversation with New York Times best-selling author Andy Andrews about his phenomenal book, How Do You Kill 11 Million People?
Andy, there was a story in the book that I don't think I'm ever going to forget. And it has to do with...
I know what you're talking about.
A choir.
Yeah.
Singing.
Oh.
I know what you're talking about.
Apparently Meg
read
the same.
Changed me too. I was waiting. If he doesn't ask, I'm going to ask. Go ahead. Yes.
I read it with a sense of dread. I sensed where it was going and I got sicker and sicker.
Yeah, it's chilling.
And Andy, I'm going to apply it to my own life in a second because I don't have an answer. I don't quite know what to do.
Do you mind me reading this?
I'd love
because
it.
Because it was
Please.
A deposition that was done after Nuremberg. And here's what it was. Because, you know, people say, well, why didn't somebody stop him? You know, why didn't anybody know? Well, they knew. They knew. And here's the deposition. It says, we heard stories of what was happening to the Jews, but we tried to distance ourselves from it because we felt, what could anyone do to stop it? Each Sunday morning, we would hear the train whistle blowing in the distance, then the wheels coming over the tracks. At church, we became disturbed when we heard the cries coming from the train as it passed us by. We realized it was carrying Jews like cattle in the cars. Week after week, the whistle would blow. We dreaded to hear the sounds of those wheels, because we knew that we would then hear the cries of the Jews en route to a death camp. Their screams tormented us. We knew the time the train was coming. And when we heard the whistle blow, we began singing hymns. By the time the train came past our church, we were singing at the top of our voices. If we heard the screams, we sang more loudly. And soon, we heard them no more. Years have passed, and no one talks about it now. But I still hear that train whistle in my sleep. And the question for us, Ryan, Meg, is how loudly are we singing?
Wow.
You know, Andy, I view that from a couple of different angles. We're singing hymns to the Lord in what couldn't be a more blasphemous way. We're singing to drown out the cries of God's people. And then from the flip side, can you imagine having crammed your family unknowingly into a cattle car where people will die, where they'll freeze to death before you get to some of these camps? Or if you get to the camp, you're in forced labor and then exterminated, and you hear people singing hymns to the Lord, and you cry out for help. And they sing louder to drown you out. Mm. I mean, I'm mortified. And yet,
you know, you and I cannot help. I mean, I'm sitting across from you and I see the tears in your eyes. And I know you and I cannot help but see our children in those situations. Mm-hmm. In our mind's eye, we cannot help but relate what happened then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. To the pathway we are traveling right now. And there is a reason that none of the world's greatest civilizations have lasted more than 200 years. I mean, yeah. A lot of people don't know, but we are the longest tenured government on the planet. Do you realize that?
Yeah.
There are countries older than us. But as far as a continual government, we're the oldest or the last, depending on how you look at it. And we exist as we do by the grace of God, but I wonder sometime how long he'll stand by.
Yeah.
Andy, we have over 300 million people in the United States, correct?
Yep, 311 million at the last census.
And how many in political leadership? 554?
545. One president, nine Supreme Court justices, 100 senators, and 435 members of the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. And what percent of Americans vote?
Well, Now, that's
do we have absolute numbers?
Yeah, I do. And I have an absolute number that will blow your mind because, you know, you look at that 545, and we put them there, and we keep them there. You know, I mean, the statistics show that we have a less than a 10% approval rating of Congress, and yet, for years and years and years, we have returned incumbents to Congress at a better than 90% rate. And so we do it, okay? And if you look at what we allow, in the last quarter century, Meg, every federal election, there's not been a single presidential election that has been won by more than 10 million votes. They've all been that close. And yet, in the past quarter century, there's not been a single presidential election in which fewer than 100 million people of voting age did not vote. Now, did you hear that?
Mm. Yeah.
And listen, a supermajority of that 100 million identify themselves as born again. That's how they identify themselves, according to poll.
Mm.
And so, you know, the truth is that if Christians paid attention or decided to do something, overwhelmingly, we could do something. And so the problem is the lack of votes. And
do you think it's lack? I mean, I think on one hand, it's lack of votes. On the other, it's this infighting where
if
a candidate doesn't match every single criteria of every single group, then it's the, well, we're going to take our ball and go home. We're not going to play anymore. I mean, if he's not going to say every last denominational thing that I want him to say every time I want him to say it at every possible moment he could possibly say it, then we're not going to do this.
Right.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I was watching one of my friends has a television show, and he was interviewing another one of my friends. And this friend said, how do we turn this country around? How do we do this? What do we do? And the guy, who's very smart and, you know, great guy, and he said, what we do is we have to have a president of the United States who will say Jesus Christ is Lord, a Congress who will proclaim Jesus Christ is Lord, and that's the only way we're going to turn this around. Now, I heard that, and I agree with that as a result, as a final thing, that yes, that is what we should work toward, and that's what we want as a final result. However, that's not how we're going to turn it around, because we have to listen very closely to what we're saying and to what we're believing, because that's a final result. That's not how we're going to turn it around. Mm-hmm. How do we turn it around was the question. And you and I are not going to go out there today and make this president and this Congress and this Senate do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
And so what we have to do is we have to move our country in a direction. And what you said just a few minutes ago, Ryan, you said that people get so bent out of shape that their denominational X's aren't crossed, their boxes aren't checked, and whatever, that they say, well, I'm just not going to do it. Look, you have to understand, it's not about an election anyway. It's about a direction.
Sure.
We are wanting to move our country in a direction in which we can prove principles that will become better financially for the country, better for families in the country, better for young people, better for seniors, better for our standing in the world and our influence with other countries.
Yeah.
This is what we have to do. And it will not happen with a bold stroke, not by us.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke to Congress last January, Congress and their spouses. And I hate to say this because I don't know. I was not overly enthusiastic when I got through. I had some talks with some of them off on the side. I enjoyed the experience, right? But I also felt like somehow I didn't get through to them in a way that would make a difference.
Mm.
I realized, and this has come late to me, I suppose. I haven't put this in any book yet or anything, but I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And that is, we tend to move in the wrong direction, you know, and I probably said this ad nauseum, but that we think logically to wrong conclusions. But in our society, there has become an increasing value placed upon compromise. There's a huge value.
Now, you're hitting my...
All right, now listen.
This is my one of my big hot issues. I never have ever elected someone to reach across the aisle.
Okay, listen.
Or to build bridges with people that don't believe what I believe.
Right. It is okay, even good, to compromise if you are compromising on an opinion. That works. You compromise an opinion, you will get 100% value from your compromise. You know, Meg, you think blue. Okay, well, I think green. Now, neither one of us are going to be real happy with this, but we're going to go blue-green. We're just going to go teal. Nobody will ever know that we were at each other's throats, and teal's going to work. Okay? Yeah. You know, teal, turquoise, whatever. We're going to go blue-green. We can compromise on that. Because it was an opinion, and because it was an opinion, that compromise will still yield 100% of its value. However, when you compromise on a principle, you get nothing. If you compromise on a principle for whatever reason, maybe you just don't understand it all. Maybe you just don't agree with it. Maybe you think that the times in which we live, but a principle is all or nothing. You know, you can say, well, you know what? I totally get the principle of gravity, and I know that it's been around a long time, and I see how the Wright brothers used it. I see how the guys that made suspension bridges, NASA certainly made great use of that in the 60s and 70s. But, you know, in the times in which we live now and the way that our world has changed, and you think about the technology and the culture and the children, you know, I can't go all the way. I can't sign off on this. And so I'm willing to go 75% of gravity, and I'll sign that. And so so people compromise on a principle. But I got to tell you something. If you only compromise to 75% of gravity, if you fall off a cliff, you ain't going 3/4 of the way down.
That's right.
Right. Right.
And so when we have leaders who do not understand that it is okay to where they look and they go, all right, is this an opinion or is this a principle? Because if it's an opinion, let's go all in. Let's get this done now.
Yeah.
How refreshing would it be to have a leader stand up and say, here are my principles, and just be very clear about it, and I won't compromise on these.
And you know, for a long time, people have said, you know, I'm sorry, but I can't get elected doing that. I just can't get elected. Well, I disagree with that. And I disagree with it so much that I decided to prove it to myself and several other people. So for the past several years, you know, I've worked with several candidates. And, you know, what I do, I communicate. And I communicate in a what I guess is a plain way. And I want to prove things to people, not encourage them. I want to prove them. And so I've worked with several people, and we've had some amazing results. And so this summer, you know, coming up with the congressional and, you know, the federal elections coming up in November, this summer I'm going to teach a couple of classes, and we're putting some stuff together that people running for stuff can and we're going to teach them how to win. And we're going to teach them how to win with the truth, how to communicate the truth in such a way that people come out and vote.
Andy, I want to ask you a question, because you mentioned this a couple of times in the book, and I've heard you do it in interviews before. There's not a politician or president that's ever been elected who will come out and say, it's a good idea to have a really complicated tax code, that having thousands and thousands of ambiguous rules and regulations in the tax code is a great idea, and here's why. They all say they want a stripped-down version of the tax code. They want something easy and simple. And here's what I want to ask you. When you talk to politicians and presidents, if they all agree that the tax code should be simpler, why isn't it simpler? Is that because we're being lied to?
You know, frankly, the reason that it is not simpler is there are so many holes in this thing that will allow them to continue to do business as usual. That's why it's not simpler. There are so many opportunities for the people who are already in office to take advantage of what's being done, and they're scared to death to change. I don't think we're going to get anything different than what we've got. Right. You know, do I think that telling the truth is going to change everything? Well, no. But I do think that's
the least.
But it
would certainly get us in the right direction.
Well, that's the least we should require of our elected leaders.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't it interesting that right now, today in 2014, right before we're going to have a midterm election, that somehow we can't demand and get honest leaders, people that tell the truth. And we can't say, listen, if you lie to us, then we're going to make sure you either recall the election or we don't elect you around next time we get someone that tells the truth. We don't even believe we can get people to tell the truth. I mean, if you asked 100 people today, do you think in the midterm election we're going to elect people that tell the truth 100% of the time? Are you going to get one yes in 100?
No,
would you get one in 1,000?
Yeah, not 100% of the time.
I mean, we had presidential hopefuls meet with my dad who lied to him while they were sitting there. And he'd come back and we'd talk about it and I'd say, they know, you know they're lying, right? They know that you know they're telling a lie. It's all lip service. We know this. They know we know it. And yet we sit in the same room and I just don't understand it.
You know, and there's no other job in America that you could get away with doing that.
Wow.
I mean, if I lied to my patients, if you lie in a company, if you lie, you are out the door as quickly as can be.
Yeah.
And yet it's something that we've come to expect with politicians.
So, Andy, can you imagine if Meg started lying to all her patients and she was like, yeah, but it was for your own good.
Yeah, for
you're having pneumonia.
You're too dumb to really understand truth, and so I had to tell you that for your own good, for your best interest, I had to do that.
Well, it is curious. It is curious that if we lie to Congress, it's a felony. But if they lie to us, it's politics.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We've got a little bit of time left, but Andy, I liken this to my life right now because between my house and my parents' house is an abortion clinic. And I can't hear those cries. But I know they're crying out.
Right.
So how am I any different?
How loudly are we singing? Now, just like we talked about when we talked about parents and parenting and our children and how people change, the same is true. Changing society and their opinions and their thoughts and their decisions with proof. Proof. And maybe we have a harder time of it when we look across and we see people who have been taken over by something. Their thoughts aren't their own anymore.
Right.
But by ignoring the issues and remaining silent while our children grow up and not explaining to our children what abortion is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a conversation with Adam, who was 10 at the time, and he said, Daddy, what is abortion? And I said, no, where did you hear that word? You know, and he said, well, I heard it on TV. I heard somebody else talking about it, and I explained it. I guess kind of in a way you would to a 10-year-old, but the clinical way mm-hmm. that happens. And I explained, I said, I showed him a video, a sonogram.
Oh.
And I said, now, you see this baby's, do you see the head? Do you see the eyes? Do you see the fingers? You know, some people would say that this is not alive, that this is not anything. So what does that look like to you, Adam? And Adam said, it looks like a baby. I said, well, it looks like a baby because it's a baby. And so I explained what somebody would do. And I didn't explain it graphically. I said that they would kill it. And he was horrified. And I said, now, Adam, here's what I want you to understand. That baby that you're looking at, that's you. And he said, me? I said, yeah, Mom and I had a video done when the sonogram was done of you. And I said, so that little baby right there turned into you. Mm. And so there are little babies out there who are not allowed to grow up into Adams or Austins or Lincolns or and look, here's what I'm saying, because right now, I mean, this isn't necessarily about politics or about abortion or about, this is about the Great Commission and reclaiming our world for Christ. And and so what I'm trying to explain here is that gently and tenderly we can explain the truth. And the truth is fairly simple to prove beyond a reasonable doubt because it just makes sense. And you know what? My 10-year-old, that explanation was not above his pay grade.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, I don't want to get too deeply into this, but when you have a national leader, when you have a president of the United States who on Father's Day 1 year is in a church and he says, men, your responsibility as a father begins at conception. It does not begin at birth. Your responsibility as a father begins at conception. And then you go out and you tell other people that life begins at birth. Here's the thing. You can't have it both ways. And so all I'm saying is you're either lying to one group or you're lying to another.
Yeah.
Right.
And so you ask, where are some lies? It's easy to find them.
Sure.
Because now people don't get away with what Hitler did unless we allow them to. And how do we allow them to? By singing as loudly as we can and enjoying our day today and forgetting about tomorrow and our children and their children.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when we think about that, Andy, too, I think about all the kids out there in homes or mothers out there, fathers out there who are going about the daily business of life in our homes. And I think that every single one of us is singing very loudly in our own way because our kids are constantly being lied to. We're being lied to because we are saturated with so much media because electronics are so huge in our lives now. And so we're being talked to all the time. And a large proportion of what comes at us is lies. And how the great responsibility of a parent is to say, you know, how loudly am I going to sing and allow this to keep coming at my kid, coming at my kid? And yeah, it's on a different scale than, you know, abortion or you know, allowing things like that. But I think that we all have to start somewhere and we have to at least step up to the plate as parents and put our arms up and say, on some level, enough is enough. Coming at my kids, they're not fair game right now, and they're not going to be lied to, because those young girls going to an abortion clinics, they've been lied to for years. But as I often say at pro-life conferences, you know, it was a process to get them to the place where they were able to walk into that abortion clinic.
Yep.
A lot happened in the years leading up to that, and it was many, many, many lies. And so to whatever degree our kids are being lied to, which they all are in our homes, it really is a great call to action, I think, your book here. And that's what moves me so much about that, is it hit home so hard with me, is what am I allowing in my life? How am I being lied to? And am I going to stop it? And how are my kids and my grandchild being lied to? And what can I do about that today?
Hmm. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we are.
Andy, you make me think. I appreciate it so much. I really do. I want to be tested. I want to be challenged. I want to know that what I believe is true. And every time I'm with you, when I'm reading your books, I get challenged. I get tested, and I'm always the better for it.
Thank you
for coming out this way.
I'm honored to be here, and I want to keep up with everybody. I love. You know, I had such a great time looking at your Facebook there, and I'm on Facebook. Just find Andy Andrews and click like. I will be your friend.
We'll put a link on our website today.
So, but thank you guys, Meg. I just appreciate it so much. You guys both of you. I appreciate the time because iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, gosh, we're all sitting here, the microphones and headsets, but I could be in the living room with just my closest of friends. I feel like I could talk forever to you guys and that we could work to figure some stuff out.
Yep. I agree.
Kindred spirits, that's for sure. How to kill 11 million people. Bam. Boy, oh boy. Mm. Andy and Andrews, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Andy.
If you'd like to pick up a copy of Andy's book, How Do You Kill 11 Million People? Or you'd like to find out more about the ministry of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, please give us a call, 877-732-6825, or visit our website, drjamesdobson.org. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again next time right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.